The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Christmas. I wonder what Christmas is like in Florida. How is it down there, Admiral? What do you do at Christmas time?
Well, we're up in the panhandle now because we're originally from Chicago. We like that sting in the air. However, they forgot Christmas apparently here because it's like, what is it, almost 80 degrees outside.
That was my
so point. Much for Christmas.
Yeah, it's hot.
Yeah, well, usually we're up here, though, and it's really brisk. We walk on the beach. We look like Nanook of the North because we're so bundled up. It's like 40 degrees, and sometimes it got down to even a light dusting of snow some years. But this year, I'm not going to say anything about global warming because that's all hocus pocus.
You bet it is. Kind of like hunting Hitler. I think you took you long enough. You finally laughed. All right, okay.
I'm an old man. It takes me a while.
No, you got it. You got it.
I got it.
Now, has your wife left you yet?
No, why? Was she going to?
Well, I hope not. I mean, you guys only do the work of 38 people.
I mean...
Between the two of you,
I should. Well, we got a lot of volunteers too. You know, now that we can operate independently across the world here electronically, but I'm hoping to win the lottery someday and put six people to doing my job.
Yeah, I know. Well, you guys do such. Harry's wife forces him to take a bubble bath every night with her, but. I mean, that's a sweetheart.
Yep,
you got a great
She is a great lady. Yeah, I'm lucky. We had 36 and a half years so far.
Wow. They don't do that
anymore.
She
thinks she's working on sainthood being with me this long. And I can imagine I'm not an easy guy to get along with.
No, that's not true. You're just a cupcake. It's not a problem.
Yeah, as long as everything goes my way, then we're happy.
Stay away from ladders and roofs and, you know. look, are you, we all know what's going, you know more than you'll ever tell anyone listening, and I know a few more things. Things are not good out there, and I'm just hoping you'll be able to get to go back down to Patagonia at some point. I say that with all hope, and it is It's true that this could get so bad you can't go for a few years. I don't know.
I don't know if it's a few years or if it's going to be permanent.
I mean, they are now demanding everybody gets the bioweapon shot, and that ain't happening. So,
well, in Florida, our government, our governor, has his head screwed on straight. He just came out with a law to where if parents think their schools are teaching their kids critical race theory, they can sue the school. And if a company says you've got to have the jab or you can't come to work anymore, you can sue the company. We got a good governor down here. This guy is sharp.
Oh, I know. Now they're talking about Trump endorsing him.
For what?
President.
He's running again in 2022 to be reelected for governor.
Yeah, I know, but he can still run for president. It can still happen.
Yes, he can still run for president, but not in 2022, because there ain't no presidential election in 2022.
No, but he can kick off in 2023, and it could be a draft presidential movement. You know,
I'd rather he stay right where he's at, because he's doing an awesome job.
I know.
He could do a great job for the USA, too, but right now I'm looking at it selfishly. Stay in Florida. And we got to wonder, who are the Marxist Democrats going to run? Because Joe and the Ho are absolutely unelectable. I'm tapped into the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, and somehow I managed to get my name on their roster, and they keep sending me all their stuff. Send $10. We need help. This place is needs election help.
Send your money to the communists, Harry. Go ahead. Just.
Yeah, right.
Bucks for the Bolsheviks.
I don't even send my money to Trump because I don't have any anymore.
Right.
Ever since Obama came in, every month my retirement check comes in. I have to write a check for $1,000 or $2,000. To shark hunters to keep paying the bills. So we used to have a full-timer and two part-timers to help my wife and I. And now, no, we don't have any timers.
Wow. Well, ever since your neighbor left.
Yeah, thank God he got kicked out. His mother called the police to have him kicked out. So the local druggies are going to have to find someplace else to go get their fix. We live out in the woods, so nobody comes along except everybody knows about it. So now nobody's coming along, thank God. It's a quiet, dull, peaceful neighborhood again. Boring, boring, boring.
No, you got Bigfoot there. Don't forget the picture. I've sent you photographic proof.
Yeah, I know. I know. I've got those three pictures of Bigfoot around behind my house, around behind my screen porch. Yep. I wish I could teach him how to use a paintbrush.
Does your house need painting? Is that what you're saying?
No, but my screen room could use a little paint.
Oh, so we'll have a. Well, we can't. We can't reveal where Harry lives. So, I was thinking of a volunteer painting thing. Can't do that.
Once the wet weather has gone away, which it has, I'm going to start working out back to push the foliage back. If we get wet weather, you can't get back there with the lawnmower. So in Florida, greenery grows at a humongous rate. And I've got the jungle within like 15 feet of my back deck. So I like it, but I don't like it right on my back deck. The further I knock it back, the less mosquito problems I have.
Do you get mosquitoes in winter?
Yeah,
I guess when it's 80 degrees, you do. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're actually
the Hubble down.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say the Hubble down the street, which was the other part of the pharmacy in the neighborhood. We got We got those people kicked out, too. There's about 100, 150 old tires laying around, and they get water in them, and they become a breeding ground for the mosquitoes. Yeah. But just before I left, you know, we're going on vacation right now, but just before we left, somebody set the damn place on fire, and there were two fire trucks, two squad cars, an ambulance, and a battalion chief, and he called code enforcement and hollered at them, and so the place is probably going to be torn down by the end of the year, and all that's going to be gone. I called it in. It was 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was just starting. The blaze was just getting started, so I called it in.
Uh-huh.
And the lady asked if I'm the one that set the fire, and I said, lady, if I had set the fire, first off, it would have been in the dead of night, not in the daytime. Secondly, I wouldn't be calling it in. And thirdly, if I'd set the fire, this place would have been gone within about 2 minutes. That was my career field in the military, was weapons and demolition.
Right.
But it's going to be gone. I had nothing to do with it except constantly bugging the officials.
Right.
So
right.
Things are back to dull, boring, and peaceful, and I can work my 12 hours a day without having to go out front and meet the police.
Got it.
And tell them which way the guy went that they need to arrest. One of them, the little drug dealer next door, about 3 months ago, they were after him with a warrant, and he tried to run. He outran two cops, but the third one hit him in the ass with 50,000 volts. I wish I could have seen that. Tasered a little bum.
Wow. Well,
I told the cop later, I said, why'd you use a taser? Why didn't you use your 9mm?
Yeah, and he said, he laughed.
He
had to chuckle.
He just
right?
said, can't do that. C'est la vie.
Can't do that. All right. Okay, Maestro, what do we have planned for tonight? Now, all of you can go to guests and click on Admiral Cooper, and there'll be a photo gallery right underneath. And we're going to talk about U-boats tonight, it looks like. And I have it titled U-boat Heroes and Tragedy.
Yeah,
a lot of
that's
tragedy.
Exactly.
Is that a good title?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very good title. And you didn't
okay,
even know
so,
what I was going to talk about so much.
No, it's psychic. So open up the open the gallery. And take a look at the pictures, and we start out with that very nice Shark Hunters, History Not Hate. Is it nothing more truthful than that? People have tried to smear
right.
Harry for years simply because he's focused, for the most part, on the German military, the U-boat fleet, all the U-boat efforts during the war, and so many men died. But we have always on this program included men of all countries fighting under all flags and given them all their just desert, their reward, their honor, their tribute. And that's Shark Hunters. No favorites are played here. This just says nobody else really does U-boat history. So Harry's doing
it. Right. Nobody does it accurately. There are some of these internet Johnny-come-lately wannabes. There's one that the U-boat veterans used to refer to as the U-boat.not because it's so full of rumors and theories and fairy tales. And none of these internet site people have ever met any U-boat skippers. Most of the living skippers were members of Shark Hunters, and so many of the crew. There were hundreds and hundreds of them alive. Uh-huh. And not only alive, but they were members of Shark Hunters. They were friends of mine. In the case of Otto Kretschmer, the top submarine commander of the war, we were great friends. I had a sleeping room in his house. I've been there I don't know how many times. The same with Erich Topp. I was at his house. Oh. Hess, the youngest combat submarine commander of the war, was my best friend in Germany. It just, you know, these guys were great people. And they gave me their history because I gave them my word I would keep their history honest and straight.
And you did.
Yeah, still
never,
doing it.
Never went back.
Oh, let me give a shout out to member Greg Galinsky. He's the one that did this graphic.
Very nice. Well, that's a really great
guy. He's a busy guy when he gets to that stuff. He's really good at it.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Okay, now we take next a look at one of a couple of books we're mentioning, Lost World War II U-Boat Photographs, Volume 1. And right next to that, Lost World War II U-Boat Photos, Volume 2, which we're going to take a look at.
Where did I get that title?
Cereal box, right? Air flakes.
No. You gave me that title, and I think that was great. And for your listeners, these are the first two volumes. We have, at last count, over 283,000 photos,
wow,
mostly U-boats. Not only the standard U-boat in combat, etc., but also the guys peeling potatoes, the guys celebrating Christmas, the guys relaxing back in port, and the boats in the workshop getting repaired, etc., etc. And except for my old friend Horst Bredow in Germany, I don't believe there's a collection this size anywhere else in the world, and most of them came from the U-boat guys.
That's just talk about respect and a tribute and honoring what you've done. That takes the cake. That's remarkable. Well,
they're great people.
Yeah, truly. And how many didn't come home, Harry? We got to do this every time.
Oh,
it's really important to understand.
Just a tick under 29,000. 28,800 and some. We have the list here. We have the most complete list of U-boat casualties in existence. Many, many years ago, I'm talking 20 or so years ago, before there was internet and email and all that, I was over there and I was asking if there was a list available. They only had one list at the U-boat memorial in the suburb of Kiel. It was a handwritten book, a ledger, a big one, about 2 feet long by about a foot and a half high, and very thick, handwritten with the names. It was the only record in the world of all these guys, and they gave it to me to take home and put it onto the computer. Can you imagine what that thing would have been worth if we had sold it? Holy cow. Tens of thousands of bucks, I bet you. But the very next year, I brought it back to Germany and gave it back to them. I had all the names on the computer. But then along comes our friend Peter Hansen, who was Lieutenant Zersee on board, I think it was U-255, I think, I'm not sure. He got wounded real bad in an air attack, so he couldn't go to sea anymore. And they put him into their version of like CIA, FBI, whatever, naval intelligence.
Right.
And he was sending all sorts more names of guys, for instance, who got killed in an air attack, but the boat wasn't lost, or people who got washed overboard, or people were home visiting mom and dad when the bombs fell and they got killed, or people in classes in Neustadt who got killed in bombing raids, and even some, a couple of guys got killed in car crashes while they were off on leave. Those guys are all on this roster, 28,800 and something. Guys who didn't come home. And these are all, you know,
only
like I
one,
point out in our books.
Uh-huh.
Say again?
Only one out of eight came home, wasn't that it?
One out of seven. And it's the worst attrition rate of any military. As a comparison, in the U.S. Navy, they had the worst attrition rate of any American force in the U.S. submarines. One man out of seven got killed, which is a horrible, horrible loss rate. But on the German side, it was one man out of seven came home. And these are not numbers. These are not names on a roster. These are kids whose parents were expecting them home. And as you know, I lost my son when he was 20. And it's a pain you cannot even begin to imagine. And these kids went off to serve their country, like I went off to serve my country in the Air Force and in the Coast Guard Auxiliary and CIA, et cetera. And these kids got killed. They were not monsters. They were not horrible people.
Oh, they were just 18, 19. They were teenagers, some of them, a lot of them.
That is correct. That is correct. Well, I was 18 when I joined the Air Force, and by the time I was 19, I was commanding a six-man team loading hydrogen bombs onto heavy bombers in Nebraska. So, you know, you grow up real fast, and that's what these guys did. But I came home alive, no problem. These guys didn't come home. And some of the pictures I'll point out, the ones that you're looking at, that didn't make it much past the film.
Some of them didn't make it more than a few hours out of port. I mean, it just...
No, that's true.
You never knew. You never knew.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, and at the end of the war, Harry, how many were trying to get into the U-boat service in Germany at the end of the war when fighting was just about over?
The U-boat service, the U-Boot-Waffe, was the only oversubscribed branch of the German military. They had guys standing in line waiting to get in. Even, of course, they didn't know how, they knew it was bad, but they didn't know how bad it was. They'd get on a submarine after their training. They'd get on a submarine, bundle up their possessions, maybe a last letter to mom, and sail away. 9 out of 10 U-boats were killed on the very first war patrol in the last year of the war.
Nine out of ten
didn't come back. Right. And, okay, you say the U-boat got sunk. Okay, there's also 45 to 55 guys on that boat that didn't come home, too.
Wow.
So you got a sunken boat. You also got 45 to 55 guys, unless it was a special ops mission, then they had even more. But average depends on a Type 7 in the area of 45 men, Type 9, 55 men, or if you get into the big boats, 9 D2s, maybe 80 men. And so when they're lost, they're lost. They're gone.
Just like that.
Yeah.
1 minute, they're a viable crew fighting for their country and their belief system, and no, it wasn't the evil Nazi party. They were fighting for Germany.
True.
And
right.
You got to remember that there were hundreds of thousands of German Jews who fought voluntarily in the Wehrmacht. They were in it.
Oh yeah.
It's a fact. So history has been so corrupted.
We're supposed to believe that Hitler wanted to kill all the Jews, and yet, like I say, I've been in cemeteries over there. It's all Jewish soldiers that died fighting for Germany. And also I had a friend, Helmut Schmuckel. He was a Jew. He was in command of a combat submarine, U-802. Uh-huh. And then there's Rosenbaum, Helmut Rosenbaum. That's a pretty Jewish name. He was commander of a submarine that sank a British aircraft carrier. Erhard Milch was 100% Jewish, and he rebuilt the Luftwaffe before Goering took over. So, you know, all this phony baloney stuff. They were decent young men serving their country.
Yep. All right, hold on a sec. We'll take a break and come right back and dive into our pictures with Harry Cooper coming up next. Okay, welcome back. How do you say welcome back in German?
Willkommen is welcome. I don't know about back.
Well, it's the opposite of front.
Okay, if you say so.
Never mind. It's okay. Welcome back. Here we are. Admiral
welcome
Cooper?
Back.
Yes?
Willkommen, mein Freund.
Thank you. I've got a great... Here's it. This is an expression that is just tells the whole story. Danke, grande. How do you like that for politically correct? Huh?
Yeah, I didn't think grande was part of German.
It's not. It's Latino.
No wonder
Spanish.
I didn't recognize it. Yeah.
Danke, grande. It was an attempt to be clever. Never mind.
Oh, okay.
I try.
I'm trying hard to hold back the laughter.
Well,
I'm starting to get rusty in my German because I can't get over there. All this damn And now with the new government, I'm told by my contacts over there, they're cranking down even harder now with the new government. You know, Angela Merkel is no longer chancellor. And
it's not a government,
I got an email.
It's not a government.
I got an email today from a friend of mine over there. That, as a matter of fact, the girl that was supposed to go with me down to Antarctica and got beat up by the
Monaco secret police. She's still talking to you?
Yeah, I didn't cause it. Oh. Yeah. So she said now with all the new parties, they've got a different type of government system than we do, but they have many parties, and she says all they do is scream at each other all day long and never get anything done.
You do know in Germany that if you don't get the death shot, you have to do a year in prison?
I didn't know that.
True story.
I know in Indonesia it's pretty tough. The big fellow who hosts the
and a year in prison.
The other show that I'm on for Omega Man, you have to have your credentials that you've got the shot on your cell phone. And when you go into a store, movie theater, mall, whatever, you got to show it. And if you don't have it on there, you just don't get in. And if you try to get in, they put you in a re-education camp, he said.
They'll kill you. They'll just kill you.
But he's not going anywhere. His wife just had their fourth child.
Well, I assume she's not shot up.
No, they are hardcore against it.
That's what's going to keep that baby healthy and happy and the rest of the kids. All right, let's go look at our pictures. Number four.
Actually, it's listed number six,
but it's the fourth across the top, number four. The numbers in these pictures.
Number six. That's U-6. That's the submarine, U-6. That was a Type 2 A submarine.
Oh, it is number
four. And they were using it for...
Got it.
It's photo number four, but U-boat number six. And this is the training crew. This boat was in a training flotilla. And, you know, every couple of weeks they'd get a new crew of trainees, usually a trainee skipper as well. Uh-huh. And these are the experienced crewmen that are the trainers. And they look like a bunch of hungry lions waiting for fresh meat.
So they had a training school for skippers, too. That's interesting.
Oh, absolutely.
First officer would be pumped up to training school for skipper. Is that it?
Yeah, in many cases, yeah, that's the way it was. But they only had four officers on board on a normal crew. The captain, the first watch officer, the second watch officer, and the LE, or as we would say it, LI, light tender engineer. In other words, the chief engineer. Those were about the only officers you had on board. And usually a guy would start out, he'd be the second watch keeping officer and learn those, and then the first watch officer and then skipper. But sometimes they were rushed, and so they'd send somebody to a 4-week-long school.
Right.
And towards the end of the war, they had a little book to flip through on how to be a skipper. And these skippers at the end of the war, their average age was 23. An American skipper was in his early 30s because they'd have to be in every billet for quite some time.
Right.
And these guys just shuffled off. Before long, they were putting guys in command of submarines that were not even academy grads. They were just promoted from the reserves.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Picture number five, Dear Harry.
Which is U-17.
Yeah, ever since I joined Shark Hunters, I intended to write this letter just to let you know who I am. I like to keep it short and to the point. I was born at Frankfurt, Maine, Germany, November 21, 1917. Entered the Kriegsmarine 1938, January 1, after basic training and school. After about 5 months, well, you can read all these words. I can't read these.
Kriegsmarine Funkstelle, in other words, Kriegsmarine radio training in Kiel, Tannenberg. Tannenberg is a suburb. This was from Carl Steffen, He was one of our members who was a U-boat veteran. And like I said, we had hundreds of them. And I just put a couple of these in there just for examples.
Nice. Nice. Very good. Very nice. Yeah, you had such great people in there. Okay, number six. Photo
number
of
six, that's U-boat.
U-27. Yeah.
Right. Taking out the porthole of SS Wacosta, which had been stopped and searched and found it was not carrying any war material, so they were let go. And one of the guys took this photo of U-27 out the porthole, and U-27 was sunk shortly thereafter before this picture ever made it into Life magazine. So all those guys you see up in the conning tower and everybody inside, they were dead.
People don't understand that in the early part of the war, ships were stopped, boarded, and searched for wartime contraband supplies.
Right.
They weren't just randomly sunk. It was a different story in the beginning.
That's what was called the prize regulations. And Germany was adhering to them until after a while. Then they went into unlimited. And, of course, the U.S. submarines were totally into unlimited warfare. And when Admiral Dönitz was in the dock at the tribunals there in Nuremberg, they wanted to hang him. But what saved his butt was Admiral Nimitz, our commander-in-chief of the Pacific Fleet, posted a memo or contact or whatever and said the German submarines operated exactly the same way as the American submarines. No warning, just sink a ship. And that saved him from the rope. And the man did nothing wrong, but they charged him with waging aggressive warfare. What other kind of warfare is
there?
Wait,
what? That was the actual verbiage? Waging aggressive warfare? That's an obscenity. All right, U-29, picture number
U-29.
Seven.
Yeah, this is this type is a 7A. It's different from all other German submarines in this one regard. You see where it's circled there? That's the after torpedo tube 5. And in the 7A, it is above the waterline. You'll notice all the other submarines, all the other German boats, forward torpedoes, stern torpedoes, they were all below the waterline. But
that's
the 7A had it above.
How many 7A
in this case,
boats were made? Quite a few? Or just a few? That's very interesting.
I don't have that in front of me, but I think it's a dozen or so. And then they went to the B, then the C, the 7C. They made more of those than some countries have ever made in their entire lifespan. They made, I think it was about 800 of the 7. No, maybe 8. Like I say, I'm not in my office, so I don't have those figures in front of me. But they made hundreds and hundreds of the 7Cs. That was the one you see in all the war movies.
So what do we got on the right of this picture? These are three people looking across U-29 at that sinking cargo ship in the back. I don't know.
That's probably another submarine.
On the conning tower, maybe.
Yeah, because it's up high over these guys' heads. I would guess that's on the tower of another boat.
And you don't see anybody machine gunning the people getting off of the sinking freighter, do you?
No. They must have missed that memo.
All right, next. Number eight.
Number eight, and that's U-30. And I know this one very well because the chief radio operator on that boat, and he went to U-110 later. He was a good friend of mine, Georg Kugel. He was an art professor later on at the university in Munich. And he'd be sitting there talking to you, looking you straight in the face, and he'd be sketching all this time. And when he's all done, he'll hand you the sketch, and you'll think it's a sketch of you. No, it's some girl off to your left somewhere that he was looking out of the corner of his eye, and the man is an incredible artist. He's gone. The yellow circle is the conning tower emblem, which was, or called a term obsession. It's a little puppy, because when they were dockside, this little puppy grabbed one end of the line and started running down the dock. And of course, when it pulled tight, the little puppy knocked himself around. And so they adopted the puppy. This was a unique boat. This was the first boat in many respects. It was the first boat at sea during the war. It was the first one to see combat. It was the first one to fire a torpedo. The first one to blow up a rock that looked like a cruiser. And the first one to sink a ship. They sank the liner Athenia, which was a big problem because it was... it was a liner, and they weren't supposed to sink liners. But yet, in the captain's defense, the liner should have been running in a straight course with all the lights on. This one was darkened, and it was zigzagging, and he thought it was a target. So he sank it. And right up the road from it, about a mile up the road, a mile at sea further out, was the luxury yacht Southern Cross, which was owned by Axel Winogrand, the wealthiest man in the world at that time. His mistress, Inga Arvad, had been Hitler's date at the 1936 Olympics. And then when she came to the U.S. after the war had started, but before we were in it, she became the mistress of John F. Kennedy, which got him kicked out of naval intelligence and sent to the South Pacific. J. Edgar Hoover wanted to kick him out of the military entirely, but his dad didn't want that. But his dad also didn't want him running around with this non-Catholic divorcee. So that's how he got sent to the South Pacific.
Oh, that's a very interesting little footnote. I remember you telling that story before. Yeah.
Right. We put all this sort of stuff in our magazine that comes out almost every month. And if anybody wants information, just send me an email, sharkhunters@sharkhunters.com or sharkhunters@earthlink.net. Either one or both of them. And we'll send you all the information you need. So the Athenia, Axel Winogrand founded the Electrolux Vacuum Cleaner Company, and he also bought that yacht from Howard Hughes just before the war started. A lot of things tie together here.
It's funny. Yeah. Okay, number nine, U-31.
Number nine, that's U-boat 31. That's pretty well covered there in the title. A civilian with a camera means this is a publicity photo shoot. And we've got several photos of U-31 during this time. They had a guy over the side attaching a camera to the boat below the waterline, et cetera, et cetera. And Keloy, which is short for Capitaine Lieutenant, he has no beard, and you look at the rings on his sleeve. He's got two and a half rings. That makes him Captain Lieutenant, which is the same as Lieutenant Commander here in the U.S. Navy, Coast Guard, etc.
Very good. Okay. Number 10, U-33.
U-boat 33. We are the ones that broke the story about Operation Ursula, in which German U-boats were actually fighting on Franco's side in the Spanish Civil War. You see the vertical stripes there on the conning tower. Indicates that they are part of the peacekeeping force or whatever the heck it was called. And they also had broad stripes on the bow, the deck. And so, surprise, surprise, a Spanish submarine just blew up, and they thought it was a boiler explosion. No, it was one of the German submarines torpedoed him, and nobody was supposed to know that. We broke the story, and then, surprise, surprise, everybody and his brother on all these internet sites jumped on that. Oh, yeah, right, Operation Ursula. We know all about that. Yeah, well, they didn't. They got it from Shark Hunters.
Well, you've filled in the empty spaces in history more than anyone ever will, and broke more stories than anyone could count, and that's the truth. All right.
That's what I do, 12 hours a day.
You do. Next up.
On to 11.
Number 11. Whoops. Yeah. Somebody got shredded there at the top. Whoops.
Yeah. If you ever saw that movie, Down Periscope with Kelsey Grammer, where they were trying to sneak into a harbor, they were going to come underneath this huge tanker and wear it as a hat. Well, that's what this guy was doing, U-35, during maneuvers. He was going to wear the battleship Graf Spee as a hat, but he got too high, and the props of Graf Spee kind of shredded him. Fortunately for the boat, this is only the upper structure, which is very thin, like 16th of an inch, maybe an eighth of an inch thick, because it's not pressurized. But if he'd have got into the pressure hull, it might have broken the pressure hull and sunk the boat. Well, it sure as hell would have destroyed the props on Graf Spee.
Imagine the noise inside. Wow.
Yeah, especially up in the bow room. Must have scared those guys. They would have needed new underwear after that.
I would think. Okay. Rape is, there's so many pictures in these books. They're just treasuries of history. Okay.
Yeah, and these are all... these are library quality reference books. These two books are 8.5 by 11 inches, about 300 pages thick, loaded with photos. The photos you're not going to see anywhere else. Some, most of them, though, are stuff that we got.
Mm-hmm. Hey, number 12. Interesting shot. U-37 with twin, what, 20s? What do we got there?
There you go. This is an old type 9A that normally would have one or two 20 millimeter, the old style, on the, what they call the winter garden, the rear deck. But this is the type 21 turret that they were experimenting with early in the war on board U-37. Werner Hartmann was the skipper. And his son, Günther Hartmann, was also he retired the Navy after the war as a Kapitän zur See, and he was a member of Shark Hunters until a few years ago. But this is showing that it's an experimental. These turrets were originally set for 30 millimeters, but they couldn't get the 30 millimeter guns delivered in time, so... at the end of the war. These were just 20s because they were testing the design. Mm-hmm. These were hydraulically operated. And when, I forget what boat it was, but there was one of the officers on a Type 21 that had these that was in the wrong place at the wrong time when they spun the turret and he was crushed.
Ouch.
Bummer. Yeah, ouch.
Yeah. What's on the front of the boat off in the distance there? You got that big piece of steel coming up. A lot of them had it. Was that for going under a larger boat and ripping the hull open? Was that
used for that? No, it's a net cutter.
All right. There was never anything on the front of a U-boat that was designed to rip open the hull of a boat that you know of?
Nope. It was a net cutter, and those were on the early boats. After a while, they... got rid
dropped
of them
him.
For the clean design.
Right.
That was a popular thing in World War I, and they had some in World War II in the early days, and then they just dropped it.
Got it. All right. Number 13, U-46. Conning Tower has seen better days. What happened?
Yeah. This gives new meaning to the term close combat. He got hit by a destroyer, or by one of the escorts. This was the boat of Engelbert Andras. He was
when you say got hit, what do you mean? They hit him with some
kind of...
Got
run over. Yeah, they were underwater, but not deep enough, and the other ship ran him over.
Wow.
These guys got in close. They didn't fire from a mile away and claim they hit something. They got right up in there. And the skipper was Engelbert Andras, who was best buddies with Erich Topp, who was a good friend of mine and member of Shark Hunters. Mm-hmm. And in the U-Boot-Waffe, they were referred to as Casper and Pollux, the twins, because they were always together. And when he was killed, it hit Top pretty hard. And most people don't know it. It was Andros who sank the battleship HMS Royal Oak. Not with this boat. He was first watch officer on board U-47, which was Günther Plien's boat, but we have heard from guys in the U-Boot Waffe, that it was actually Andros that conned U-47 past the block ships and into the harbor, and he's the one who sank the ship, the battleship.
In the harbor?
In the harbor, yeah.
Nobody knows that story. That's remaking it. Yeah. Right in the harbor.
Wow. They sank the HMS Royal Oak. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think it was about 800 guys went down with that ship, too. Again, young kids waiting to go home to their parents or to start a life. But unfortunately, war sucks. Nobody really wins a war.
No. All right. Hold on. We'll come right back with Harry. Take a look at some more photos. Number 14 is next with U-48. Now, this guy, Romlo, has an interesting history, doesn't he?
He sure does.
I remember this. All right, hold on. We'll come right back with Harry Cooper, SharkHunters.com.